case of United States against Roberts. Mr. Walsh, don't get comfortable.
If it pleases
Mr. Walsh.
Could I reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal, please? Please the court, I'm Robert Walsh. I represent Mr. Roberts in this matter and thank the court for allowing argument today on this very troubling, difficult case. I also represent Mr. Roberts before the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. I checked with the clerk yesterday and the case is not yet assigned in chambers and it'll probably be 6 months before we have a decision in that form. One of the significant issues we briefed is the lack of intent in this case. If there's going to be fraud, there needs to be intent. Mr. Roberts had a heart attack at age 37. He filed a claim for veterans benefits, and he was awarded pension. It took several years, but he was awarded pension. Pension is analogous to Social Security supplemental security income. It's a safety net benefit of about $900. It's means tested. So if there's other household income, it will be offset from that. He also then applied for some disability benefits, which compensation, which is similar to Social Security disability, is not means tested. And after several years, he did make a claim for post-traumatic stress disorder. That transaction and occurrence that was the stressor for his post-traumatic stress was the death of Gary Holland in 1969, and then about 6 months later, or December of that year, he was taken by the MPs to the psych hospital, to the Naval Hospital, and placed in restraints and shot up with Thorazine. And this psychotic episode was also alleged to be a stressful incident. Now, under VA regulations, he only needs one stressor. He need not have two or three. He only needs one. He has two that are verified in the record. Now, the people have alleged that his participation in the ill-fated rescue attempt for Airman Holland, that his participation wasn't that great. However, the Naval Hospital record clearly indicates that he was hospitalized, he was psychotic, and he was medicated with Thorazine many months later. The psychologists and psychiatrists who have examined him have concluded that he has post-traumatic stress disorder. In the sentencing, there was testimony once again that he has post-traumatic stress disorder and that it's verified in military records. Nothing that a veteran says is going to be the basis of a post-traumatic stress disorder award of benefits by the VA. They need a medical diagnosis, and they need a verified stressor. And I have never seen, it's a total distortion in this record, and any suggestion that any veteran can just walk into the VA, file a claim, and say, you know, a peacetime veteran, that I was here in the States and I was sexually assaulted and it's stressful and give me money. And the answer is, did you tell the chaplain? Did you go to the hospital? Did you confide in a family member? Do you have a contemporaneous letter? Do you have documentation? No, I was embarrassed. Then the claim fails. Your own statement, no matter how compelling the argument, how tragic the circumstances, is not going to be the basis of an award of PTSD. Now, the VA adjudicated this with all the king's horses and all the king's men for about 10 years. They conclude that this man has post-traumatic stress disorder. They grant the award. And now they decide, after he's a whistleblower and he complains to the VAIG, now they decide that there are inconsistencies in the record. I submit to you that there are inconsistencies in every veteran's record, combat or peacetime, and that Congress has recognized that. And that's why VA benefits is a very paternalistic, claimant-friendly, non-adversarial system. It's even more paternalistic than the Social Security benefits adjudication system. So where is the intent? The intent is to get some benefits because the man can't work. Now, as far as wire fraud, when Congress changed the law and suggested that electronic funds transfer would be a permissible vehicle for paying benefits across the government, they made it elective. In the Social Security Administration, it was elective. Most people have electronic fund transfers. Some old people still like to get a check in their hand, and they still get it. VA General Counsel in 1997 issued a precedential opinion, and they said, we believe that the Secretary has the authority, and we are going to mandate everyone have electronic fund transfer. Every widow, every orphan, every VA beneficiary is receiving electronic funds transfers. They can't opt out. They can't get a check. That means, under what's happened in this very remarkable case, I know this is a matter of first impression. I have discussed this with probably 30 members of the Veterans Bar. And understand that's a very small bar. There's the organization only of Veterans Advocates only has 400 members. It's not a big bar. I've talked with, I'm a former VA District Counsel staff attorney. I've talked to general counsel attorneys, retired and serving. I discussed this with the regional counsel in Detroit, who I believe should have been involved in the screening of this case before it went to the U.S. attorney. And this is a remarkable event because we have the interposition of the Department of Justice right square in the middle of a VA benefits dispute, and effectively they are litigating in the district court the same transaction and occurrence. And they say, no, we're not going to do that. The judge's pretrial motions and pretrial conference were all predicated on the fact that I'm not going to relitigate the veterans benefit case. And then they proceed at trial after they've denied many of the witnesses that Mr. Roberts attempted to call. They proceed to relitigate the 1969 events. Now, they also call for their witnesses, the individuals, the officers and non-commissioned officers who were in charge of the maintenance of that aircraft and who negligently removed the jacks, creating a situation which led to the unnecessary and accidental death of Airman Holland. And now to bring those people in, by the way, who then retired from the military, so they have a pecuniary interest in the outcome of this case, having been subpoenaed into court. They have to stick to their story that Mr. Holland caused his own death. He did not. Chief Stewart testified that the airplane was safe. Res ipsa loquitur, the aircraft was not safe. It collapsed and killed a young man. They suggest to the jury that Mr. Roberts didn't know him. They lived on the same floor in a barracks that had partitions about as high as the bench in this court. They were open partitions. They were not like a college dormitory, full walls. Why were they kept open like that? Drugs, crime, good order and discipline, bed checks, made it easy on management. I don't know. But he lived across the aisle. They shared a shower. They shared a latrine. They were together in Memphis. They were together at Lakehurst, New Jersey. They worked in a hangar where 85 people worked. And now we suggest that he didn't know him. Well, there's only two people that know about that relationship, and one of them is deceased. So I'll have to rely on the statements Mr. Roberts made. Mr. Roberts is a whistleblower. He complained to the IG about the conduct of the VA regional office, the claims adjudication office in Milwaukee. The VA IG went up, talked to the director, who told him that he didn't like Mr. Roberts, and so they proceed to go on this wide-ranging review of his 3,000 pages of administrative record. They then terminate his post-traumatic stress disorder benefit. They did not charge him with fraud in the VA administrative side of the house. they talk fraud, but what they really did is use the procedures which have a less stringent review and a much lower standard of conduct, wherein, for instance, if you break your leg and it heals up, if it heals very well, they may come back a year later and say, well, we were paying you 40% for your leg. It's much better now, periodic review. We're going to reduce it to 20% unless you can provide medical evidence to show that it should remain at 40. It happens all the time, especially with people coming back from very egregious injuries in combat for a year. They put them at 100, they reevaluate them, they may come down to 80 or 60%, and then they go home. So they use this procedure. Mr. Roberts' benefits have been in place for 10 years. There's supposed to be finality at that point. So what they've done here is a collateral attack on a final decision. They said, give us another swing at the ball. We'll take your benefits away. We'll immediately stop your benefits payments. Now you're indigent. Then he appeals to the Board of Veterans' Appeal. He tells the board on the record, I had to seek leave from the district court judge to come here to Washington for my hearing. He was not allowed to see the investigative report of the VAIG. He did not obtain that until he obtained the designation of the record from the Court of Veterans' Appeal several months later. So he's blindfolded and has his hands tied behind him at the board proceeding in front of the Veterans Law Judge. The Veterans Law Judge finds that he didn't know Gary Holland, that he doesn't meet the standards for PTSD, and they sustain the regional office action. To have PTSD, he needs one stressor. He had two. So if you eliminate one, arguendo, let's say fine. He wasn't there. He didn't take his promotion examination with Mr. Holland that morning. They didn't come back at lunchtime and cover the hangar during the lunch break because they'd been gone all morning. Arguendo, let's say that they didn't do that. He still has his psychotic break many months later while on active duty, which is documented. So he still meets the standard. But now we've determined that he's not entitled to any benefits. The testimony for benefits was that he had received $263,000 in benefits via electronic fund transfer. Mr. Funnell attempted to hypothecate this out to over $1 million. At sentencing, it was reduced down to $400,000. I don't know where that comes from. This $263,000 may very well be a Cheshire cat. If the Veterans Court rules, as I am confident they are going to, that these benefits are restored, the $263,000 is gone. He's legally entitled to it. However, we have another catch-22, because he'll be sitting in prison, he'll be incarcerated, and he's not allowed to have the benefits to which the Veterans Court, that court created by Congress in 1988 under the Veterans Judicial Review Act, is supposed to review. And I surveyed a lot of members of the bar, and we've discussed this, and a lot of veterans advocates groups. And let me tell you, there isn't any case like this. This court's been involved, you know, in Marizan with veterans coming into federal district court trying to sue the VA. And you've said, you can't. We're sorry, but we can't help you unless it's a constitutional due process issue. You've got to go to Washington. You've got to go through the VA. And it's between the executive and Congress to straighten out the mess in the VA. That's, you know, we can't do that. We're a federal court. And, you know, that's come up. It comes up all over the country. After the Veterans Court was created, it has not come up as often.
To reserve any time for rebuttal, now is the time.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Biskupic.
Thank you, Your Honor. For the United States, Stephen Biskupic. From the government's perspective, whatever complications there are in the VA system of benefits and the VA appeals court, The simple fact is you have to be truthful, and that's what this case is about, not some complex, unique set of circumstances. Was this defendant, Mr. Roberts, truthful in dealing with the VA and incorporating the fraud law? Did he engage in a course of conduct intended to deceive the government in order to obtain something of value? And those elements were put forth by the court to the jury, and the jury heard similar arguments that were put forward to you, and they rejected them. There was evidence from the people that were there in 1969 that this defendant lied about what his role was, and there was testimony that those lies were relied upon by the government in awarding in excess of $200,000, and that the defendant had attempted through retroactive application to get in excess of $569,000. The $400,000 figure is the sentencing guideline.
What were the lies as you see them?
The lies were his role, that he was directly involved in the 1969 rescue of his good friend Gary Holland, that he had led the rescue efforts, that the rescue efforts were botched, that he had to intervene to stop these incompetent rescue, that he himself was put under arrest, that he broke free, engaged in this dramatic rescue, and it all failed, and his good friend died. And because of that, in May of 1990.
What testimony was used to refute those claims?
Pardon me?
What testimony was introduced to refute those claims or other evidence?
There were seven people called who were there at the time of the rescue. None of them identified the defendant as part of it. And the main witness was a Jerry Fox, it's spelled F-U-C-H-S, who was the main investigator as a part of it. So, again, you had seven people from 1969 who were there, seven plus the chief investigator. Compared, the defendant did not testify at trial. Obviously, it's his right, but they had his statement was introduced, and they had that comparison. So it was simply a factual resolution in which it was certainly enough in the record for the jury to determine that. The other issues, to say that the VA regulations create the exclusive remedy, as the defendant has in his trial court level and now here on appeal has said, is simply contrary to anything in Title 18, as well as the CFR that empowers an OIG for the VA to refer things to the Department of Justice. Again, the other third issue is the Brady violation. There's simply nothing in the record to indicate that any evidence was withheld. To the contrary, the entire report, the Eastern District of Wisconsin, we have open file. The record is, as we cite in our brief, numerous instances where the record shows that the entire file was turned over, including the testimony of Mr. Fox, who said, yes, this is my entire investigative file. The contention that we withheld a picture of the accident scene because that would have somehow provided some exculpatory evidence is simply nowhere in the record. And finally, the last issue on sentencing, we are well past our time where a non-frivolous argument can be raised that Booker requires the jury to have found the amount of loss. And so you have a simple, straightforward wire fraud case that was brought against somebody who lied to the government. Witnesses were brought in at trial to support the evidence that he lied. The sentencing judge, having sat through the proceedings, found actual loss of in excess of $200,000, but intended loss to be in excess of $569,000. It was just, from our perspective, not unusual, a straightforward fraud case, other than the fact that it litigated an issue from 1969. If there are no other questions, the government would waive the rest of its time. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Anything further, counsel?
If it pleases the court, just a couple of points. The Brady problem is not about a couple of photographs. The numbering on the rear of the photographs indicate at least 389 photographs were logged in. Mr. Roberts has received 20 of them. He's in two of them, but you can't see his face. He identifies himself as being there. That's him. But unfortunately, he knows that, but without being able to visualize his face, we have a problem. So,
could he make a statement that not even the base commander could relieve him of what he called his command?
He was a lineman. If you've seen on an aircraft carrier, the guys wearing the yellow jackets that are commanding the aircraft and taxing
them around. I understand what his job was. I said that he'd make that statement that the base commander could not even relieve him of his responsibility.
There are specific instances in time when, in fact, enlisted people give command to officers. Now, I think he's wrong that he couldn't be relieved. Obviously, he can be relieved.
The question was whether he had made a particular statement. I think the answer is either yes or no.
He's made that statement. He believes it. He's wrong. He's wrong in part that he can't be relieved. He's right in that he was running the line shack that noon, and he was the first responder for the rescue.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. The case is taken under advisement.